she comes back. But if there's no way of moving back, what when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. Joined by investigator Shelley... Oh, I'm Vance Pollock, by the way. Joined by investigator Shelley Wright and producer Sam the Animal Steel. Check this one out. Meet the cyborg beetles, real insects that are controlled like robots. When I read that headline, I thought they were talking about cyborgs of the Fabulous Four playing Love Me Do. But no, these are actual insect robots. Wow. Borg no longer just a vision of Star Trek. The future is crawling towards us on six legs. A team of scientists in Singapore are turning live beetles into cyborgs by electronically controlling their motor functions by hacking their brains. Having studied the beetles' muscle configuration, neural networks, and leg control, the researchers wired the insects so that they could be controlled by a switchboard. In doing so, the researchers could manipulate the different walking gaits, speeds, flying direction, and other forms of motion. Essentially, the beetles became like robots with no control over their own motor functioning. Interestingly, though the researchers control the beetles through wiring, their energy still comes naturally from the food they eat. Hence, the muscles are driven by the insects themselves, but they have no willpower over how their muscles move. Moreover, turning beetles into cyborgs seems to not be that harmful to them. Their natural lifespan is 3 to 6 months, and even with the researchers' interference, they can survive for several months. According to the researchers, a beetle has never died right after stimulation. And while this technology may seem crazy, the implications are very practical. Sensors that detect heat, and hence people, can be placed on the beetles so that they can be manipulated to move toward a person. This can be helpful when searching for someone, such as in a criminal investigation or finding a terrorist. The implications in spy-type technology boggle the mind. The researchers are very serious about ensuring that whatever the applications are for this technology, that they go toward peaceful purposes. And who knows how far it could go. With this much progress, manipulating the motor functions of creatures as small as beetles, perhaps it can be used for even bigger animal targets. Kind of scary.
Very scary.
I got a pretty awesome animal cyborg at a thrift store this week. It's not fully learning, but it is a learning cyborg, technically. It's a cat that's a robotic, okay, and it stands on 2 feet. You plug an MP3 player into it, it learns the BPM, and it dances. And this thing is like the Showbiz Pizza Band level of robotics. I got it for like $1 at a thrift store in Candler.
You showed us the dancing cat.
It's amazing.
We loved the dancing cat.
Got him dancing to some Skrillex or something.
Mm-hmm. It's the thing must have had like, they spent like millions in research and development, and I got it at a dollar bin. It looks really cute, too.
Yeah, I saw the videos. You had the videos. You were showing us
throw it up
the
on
dancing
the
cat.
Facebook.
I mean, just mesmerizing. I would just sit and watch the cat dance to the music. And I used the example of the old Teddy Ruxpin cassette player that the mouth moved, and we used to put Black Sabbath tapes in there and let him sing along with Ozzy. So
I still got a Teddy Ruxpin and a Grubby.
I remember Grubby. That was like the caterpillar, right?
He hooked to Teddy via an output to input jack. I guess he ran in series. And so he kind of ran off cues in the tape that Teddy would send like a tone down the line, which would trigger Grubby.
What were the little Furbies? That's what it was. I was going to ask, but then it just popped into my head. Remember Furbies?
They were very hot for a while there back in the late
90s. Did you ever spend enough time with a Furby to get it to talk back to you?
No, I did see some at the Goodwill the other day, but I think they always died or nobody paid attention to them.
Sad.
It's like your Tamagotchi. Your Tamagotchi. Vance still has a Tamagotchi on his keychain.
No,
it died
years ago. I was talking to my wife about some friends of ours that got on the robot hamster kick a few years ago. There were little robot hamster toys, and that just came and went.
The
like
big one
so many
was the big one this year at Christmas. The thing that hatched out of the egg.
Yeah,
and they were like $150.
And that's basically what it does. Is it takes 45 minutes to hatch out of the egg, and then you've got what, a little stuffed animal.
That's it. It doesn't do anything.
I think it does nothing other than hatch. I don't know.
Toys these days.
Toys.
So dumb.
Anyway. Dubai has Superman firefighters with water jet packs. Look, it's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's, what is that? Dubai is not the richest city in the world, but it might have the coolest firefighters. Dubai Civil Defense has launched a new tool to battle fires around the coastal city and its man-made islands, water jet packs. This allows firemen to using the power of water to fly, and they are able to fly up to a fire and directly inject water into it with forward-mounted water cannons on their packs.
Mm-hmm.
This setup allows them to fly, hover, and spray water at will. The suit gives them Superman powers and has a long hose that drops into the ocean from where the water is drawn. A promotional video shows a firefighter racing to the scene on a jet ski and strapping into the jet pack, which is equipped with fire hose, and taking flight like Superman to fight a ship fire. Firefighters don't get caught in traffic on the city's busy roadways, and there's no need for a fire hydrant. The waterways provide an unlimited source of water to propel the jetpack and fight the fire.
Yeah, have you seen the videos of that?
No.
It's like basically it's a big backpack that has like what appears to be like a huge vacuum cleaner hose that dips into the water, and it basically sucks up water and propels it out at an extremely high volume, which then lifts you up like well over the water, and you steer by holding on while it's shooting water down, which is like it's like those clown heads that you used to hook to the hose and it would shoot the hat up,
right?
But like with a human body, and if you don't know what you're doing, it will propel you straight on your face into the water very hard, and you'll get really hurt. But in Dubai, man, I've been there, and that place is crazy. There are no traffic laws. Well, there are, but I mean, you'll get passed at 190 by a Lamborghini. Their cop cars over there are like Ferraris, McLarens. Those are their cop cars.
Crazy.
So I'm surprised their fire truck's not like a...
Wow. Yeah. Water jet pack firefighters.
That's a good idea,
fun
though.
Fun stuff. Yeah.
Using the sea to fight fire.
I think they'll probably find a way to make that recreational at the beach. You know how people are parasailing now?
Yeah. You can rent them at the...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Far
out. You can hurt yourself really good, too.
I'm sure. I am so sure. Well, Shelley, what are you doing over there? Shelley is sifting through some of the Dark 30 material. Of course, some of you people are looking forward to that in a couple hours, and I can promise you a wild ride tonight during the Dark 30 hour. How's life, Shelley?
Life's good.
Yeah?
Weather's great. Business is good. It's great.
Shelley, of course, proprietress of Nevermore Mystical Arts on Sweeten Creek Road, 1271.
Yes.
All right. I got it. 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. That's off exit 51 at Interstate 40.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, just a couple miles out there off Interstate 40. And Nevermore Mystical Arts, a paranormal boutique. I like
yes.
the way you put that.
Thank you.
Anything special, any items that have really caught your attention in the last week or two that you would like to tell people about?
I am still perfecting my magical bath bombs and magical milk baths. Just in time, hopefully, for Valentine's Day. They will be perfected and bring about all sorts of lovey feelings.
Speaking of Valentine's Day, here's a nice Valentine's story. I'm going to surprise my wife with this one. Celebrate your love with candlelit Valentine's Day dinner at Waffle House. Share the love. If you're looking to share a romantic meal and save a few bucks on Valentine's Day, Waffle House might be the place for you. On February 14th, Waffle House employees will dim the lights, light a few candles, and serve up heart-shaped waffles for love-struck couples. The Valentine's Day event has been a Waffle House tradition for 10 years as couples celebrate their love with a heaping plate of hash browns or T-bone steak with eggs. The reservation-only events are available at restaurants in 16 states and take this as their most serious day of business of the year. We had so many proposals during our romantic Waffle House Valentine's Day dinners. This is a great way to make a lasting impression on that special someone you love. Call your local Waffle House to see if they're participating. Shelley, what if a gentleman invited you out to Valentine's dinner at Waffle House?
No, thank you.
Oh, you're hoity-toity,
thank
are
you? You, but no, thank you.
What if it fell on a Saturday the 14th? You were talking about don't go on a first date Friday the 13th. If he invited you to Valentine's dinner on a Saturday the 14th at Waffle House. Now, if I told my wife we're going to Waffle House for Valentine's Day, rolling pin. Right well, upside down.
She would knock you over
I love
the
Waffle
head.
House.
You gotta
it's
find,
a guy thing.
No, it's not.
It's a guy.
No. It's an everybody thing. And it can be romantic. Let's say I got you melted butter on your pecan pie without you even asking. That's terribly romantic.
When they used to have the real jukebox with 45s, and it hasn't been long. Last couple of years, they did away with
it. I asked what happened to those. Because it's not the same with those digital things.
No,
I was like,
it
what
felt
did you
good.
Do?
It felt good going in there, pushing the two buttons, the letter and the number, and dropping a Johnny Cash record. You know, that was so good.
Did you play the Waffle House songs?
I played Waffle House songs. One of my favorites was Special Lady. I can sing you a verse or two of Special Lady. Driving that road and I'm hungry. Just the sound of my wheels going by.
Yeah.
I look for that big yellow sign. Special lady waiting for me at the Waffle House.
You play that in the car on the way to your Valentine's Day dinner.
She's amazing.
Putty. Putty in your hand.
I have a friend who is a chef that was trained at the Culinary Institute of America. He cannot get enough of Waffle House. Loves Waffle House.
I think another thing that kind of killed the fun of Waffle House, taking the records out and no indoor smoking, because it used to be 3 o'clock chain smoking at the Waffle House.
You can still get Cherry Coke, though, with the pump.
That's the bomb. Mm. You folks are listening to Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Vance Pollock in the captain's chair for Joshua P. Warren. Looks like I'll be sticking around. If you didn't hear the announcement last week, they approve. The forces that be approved the first couple co-hosting jobs I did here, and feedback was positive, so I was given the job. Come on in and keep bringing it. As long as you do a good job, we'll keep you around. I wanted to read some antique, some vintage news. This is kind of a teaser for what's coming up next hour. Next hour, we are going to talk about strange beasts in the Carolinas, and particularly, I mean, the diving board, the pivot point, these big cats in the Carolinas, big cats. And a few years ago, I was looking through the newspaper microfilm on an unrelated subject, and this headline caught my attention. This is from the Asheville Citizen Times, 19th of May, 1908. So we're talking well over 100 years ago.
Wouldn't that have been the Citizen or the Times?
One or the other. But you know what? When they digitized these things, they put them all under one file. So I pulled this one off this afternoon from the digital database, and it's just cited as Asheville Citizen Times. Mysterious beast kills young calf. People at Kenilworth terrified by strange screams. Animal that cries like a child but with bear tracks is sought by hunters. Now, this first line here caused me some head scratching. Has the donkey devil come back to Asheville?
I've never heard of that.
No further reference to donkey devil. That's all you get. That lead line there, has the donkey devil come back to Asheville? I'm like, donkey devil? Wow, this is good. Let me read on. Either it is, or some equally fearsome beast is prowling nightly near Kenilworth Inn and frightening people. On its first appearance Saturday night, it terrified a lady and her children who have a cottage on the path by its wild screams. Two bulldogs of approved courage went forth to meet it, but when they saw it, turned tail and ran. And it must have indeed been a queer beast which caused this fear. Its cry was something like that of a child, wherefore people suppose it is a panther or wildcat. But on Sunday, a lady and gentleman who examined the tracks said that they were long and showed signs of claws like a bear's tracks. Sunday night, the animal was again heard, and a party went out to hunt it. But although the men thought they saw it and fired several shots, no results were evident, but the animal killed a year-old calf. A calf a year old is a pretty sizable beast itself. Some think the animal is a panther, others that it is a bear, and still others that it is a tiger escaped from a circus. A tiger escaped from a circus in Tennessee some weeks ago, and it is thought that this may be the same beast. End of story. But this little article that I just ran across by chance, browsing the microfilm, sitting there at Pack Library.
Going through microfiche?
Yeah, oh yeah. Not microfiche. Fiche are the little little slides. Microfilm, you know. But every movie where somebody has to dig up the deep goods on anything, it features them in the dark corner of the library with the microfilm reader.
Fletch.
Of those people that actually has used the microfilm reader. I think the last one I noticed it in was The Ring. The lady in the ring is sitting in the library going through the microfilms and discovering all these the creepy backstory. The creepy backstory is always on microfilm, people. But this one just leapt out at me while I was looking for something else. And this tease about the donkey devil. So I held this in mind at the time. I couldn't find anything about a donkey devil online except for maybe some circus boy by that name, and I think maybe At first, I thought, okay, did the circus come to Asheville? Did the donkey devil come with the like the freak show to Asheville with a carnival? But no, apparently, and it took some puzzling out, the donkey devil was a local name for something that had been called the Santer in Iredell County. Down around Statesville, in about 1890 or so, there were sightings of a creature that resembled a black panther. Sam and Shelley, I may be getting a little ahead of myself here, but I have an absolutely frightening photo from the Statesville, or it's a sketch from 1890, from the Statesville newspaper of the Santer.
Ooh, I'm going to see it.
Don't be afraid now. I want your reaction. 1890, Statesville newspaper. This is a correspondent's sketch of what they were seeing. Long tail, claws scratching up the ground.
And head like a little sheep.
Sam needs to take a look at the Iredell Santer.
The Iredell Santer. Okay, that's a...
He's a creepy creature.
A pro did that, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a badger.
An ink blot.
Well, yeah, it could be. Is this a Rorschach test?
No, I tossed that up on the Facebook page.
I mean,
you folks can go to the Speaking of Strange Facebook page, and you should go to the Asheville Mystery Museum Facebook page. I think that's just facebook.com/mysterymuseum.
Now, are those, Asheville Mystery Museum. Is one of those a foot, or is that supposed to be like
those are
a
supposed
claw
to be
marks?
Scratching claw marks. This is 1890, so that's a woodcut.
Oh, okay.
It's almost comical by today's standards.
It looks like a lamb's face with like a parrot's beak with a little bit of badger in there.
People say that this hybrid creature that was perhaps mostly black panther but also had elements of donkey and cow and bear and you name it. But it was a fearsome creature, and it was killing cattle in Iredell County. And then a few years later, it made an appearance in Montford and started to cause quite a scare around Asheville. It got worse because the Santer in Asheville, or at least the story goes, began to shape-shift. Sometimes it would take on a human form standing up on two hind legs. And other times, speaking to people in the dark, and you start to think, okay, how much of this is just people running with a story? Something mysterious, some mysterious animal is sighted, and then Grandpa starts telling the kids these stories, you know, elaborating, exaggerating, what's the word we used to
embellishing.
Use? Embellishing. Exactly, Sam. That's why we keep you here.
Yeah. That and I can push the button, you know.
Embellishing these embellishments. Yeah, I'm going to use that word embellish a lot. Thanks. It totally just slipped my mind, fell out my ear. But
I used to live at the Kenilworth Inn, and it was.
If you heard panther cries in the middle of the night and you were out walking your dog, would that be a little bit frightening?
I had a bobcat live behind the apartments I lived in River Ridge one time. So you'd hear, rawr,
right?
But I mean, that was kind of scary because, I mean, you know, and a bear, almost hit a bear going to my parents' house.
Oh, I see the bears. And we got a nice photo from Town Mountain of a bobcat walking. I didn't take the photograph, but Friends of Town Mountain, the Neighborhood Association, shared this nice photo of a bobcat, a big guy, walking on Town Mountain. They say that they can be 40 pounds. A 40-pound cat is pretty impressive.
We had a hybrid. It was from the bobcat that was up at there in the woods, and we heard these, me and my sisters heard these little babies crying, like kitty cries, and so we go up and we get them, and they're like little kittens, but they had huge paws, and we took them to the vet or the animal hospital, and his mom wouldn't let us keep them, and they were like, that's a hybrid, like a bobcat did it with a regular house cat.
Wow.
It would have been so cool to keep. Got pictures somewhere.
We've got all kinds of things in store for you tonight. Thank you for listening to Speaking of Strange. We're just teasing you a little bit about some of the strange beasts rumored to have roamed these hills. We'll be right back. We're back here on Speaking of Strange, pondering the possibility of some folks exaggerating mysterious animal sightings 120 years ago. I think it's quite likely, especially in the case of the Iredell Santer becoming our local donkey devil. In 1926, there was another ghost stir, we'll call it, up on Valley Street, and thousands of people were out looking for this ghost or ghoul that was supposedly sighted on Valley Street. Still don't know whatever became of that one, but it seems that it was probably just a prankster running around up there trying to get a rise out of people. But it did spur this editorial that ran in the Sunday, July 4th edition, 1926. A terrible donkey devil hops from limb to limb, old-timers here recall. Strange stories of phantom in the 90s, that would be the 1890s, told following appearance of a frisky griffin on Valley Street during the past week. I love this newspaper language. Is it possible that the grisly specter which disturbed and distressed denizens of Valley Street during the past week is no ghost at all, but rather an offspring or reincarnation of that frisky phantom of the early 90s, hybrid showing strain of demon animal, donkey devil, or altering aspects? That solution of the harrowing enigma was offered by some of Asheville's elder citizens who recalled that the weird travels and bizarre appearance of the meandering monstrosity of another day were such as to make it entirely plausible for him to return to former haunts to create tumult and terror. Sounds a little bit like one of these sort of shape-shifting interdimensional type things. And of course, this is in 1926. People didn't really think in those sort of terms, but for them to say, okay, here it is 35 years later, and this could be the same same critter, just I like Frisky Griffin.
Yeah,
this could be the same Frisky Griffin that we had here back in the 90s.
There was a story we did last year.
Love the language in that one.
And we never really got a good follow-up on it, but it had, remember this, Shelley, about the Merriman Avenue, Weaver Park, the tennis courts?
I remember that.
And, like, the guy and the man and the lady, and one of them went to the gas station right there and never came back. And then, like, the cop went down there, and there was something huge in the trees.
You just asked Josh to remind you of how that story went.
I did.
This week.
I did ask him just yesterday about that, and I'm trying to remember what he said. I think that there was no follow up on it. I think
did they ever find the person? I mean, it was.
He never heard anything. Let's see what he said. The incident the cop told me about was at Weaver Park off Merriman. Still no update on that bizarre case. And then referencing something else we'll talk about later. But, yeah, no update. I would love to find out about
remember,
that.
I remember that story. It was fascinating. And from a police officer who was a friend of Josh.
It came from, like, a good source, you know.
There was something up in the trees, in the canopy over Weaver Park, which is right up there next to Luella's on Merriman Avenue, if you know that intersection.
The tennis court.
Anyway, the tennis courts are there. That's right. But there's a bridge and the creek and trees. And to memory, the police officer was called up there because there was some mysterious creature
in the woods or in the trees.
That,
like one of them left to get beer or something and never came back. And that's why the cop had come down. They were like, hey, my partner never came back or whatever. And there was something in the trees, and he said it was big enough to take a full canopy of a tree and bend it down, but it was very dark in that area at night, you know.
Strange. And when they reference in 1926 the donkey devil hopping from limb to limb, and, by the way, I didn't mention it yet, today is Chinese New Year. We are officially entering the year of the fire rooster. And leaving the year of the fire monkey, who is, he's a familiar to us here on Speaking of Strange. The fire monkey has been a good friend of Speaking of Strange over the last few years. Many years ago, I'll say 10, 12 years even ago, Mark A. Hall, who was a cryptozoologist, was the guest on the show, Joshua hosting, of course, and they got a phone call from someone here locally. I don't remember exactly where this was, but he reported seeing a burning monkey, a fire monkey, or, you know, a small, I don't know, chimpanzee-sized monkey.
BJ and the bear-sized monkey?
A bear-sized monkey.
Old reference there.
But that appeared to be on fire. And some months later, or even a year or two later, they got a phone call. We can assume from a different person, though it could have been the same person. But this one gave details or particulars that were not the same as the first report. But it was that up on the parkway near, I can't remember, but out the other side of Waynesville, that they had spotted what seemed to be a monkey running through the woods, and that it appeared to be on fire.
I don't believe they're indigenous to this area.
Must fire
have been
monkeys?
A feral fire monkey.
I can't imagine what a fire monkey, but what would lead you to see a monkey running through? Well, I can imagine you see some mysterious animal moving through the woods and you think, okay, that there's a monkey going through the woods, but in both cases, to say that it looked like it was on fire and running through the woods, mysterious. But this Chinese zodiac year now ending was the year of the fire monkey. So, and America, 1776, America was born in the year of the fire monkey. So some friends, when talking about the fire monkey of the Chinese zodiac, said, so if America was born in the year of the fire monkey and we're all Americans, then we're all the children of the fire monkey. So he kind of became a totem for some of us. And if you ever need strength and resolve, call on the fire monkey. He's our friend.
Okay.
And I extend that to, speaking of strange listeners, I dare say that the fire monkey is all of our friend because he's taken care of us for many years.
Writing that down for a T-shirt slash bumper sticker.
The fire monkey is our friend.
I like that.
We had a design that was used on some of the websites and had talked about getting T-shirts that said Fire Monkey Brigade and had a cartoon that a buddy of mine had drawn of the monkey, fire monkey. Anyway, yeah. I don't think it really got talked about in the last few years, but I remember when Fire Monkey was all the rage here on Speaking of Strange, and this has been his year. All the big changes in store, I think we were building up to this all along. So, Fire Monkey, thank you, and Fire Rooster, good luck in the new year. And what were we talking? Oh, there was a report. I think this one was from out in the Pacific Northwest, but it was I remember hearing the interview with Joshua. The guy sounded very reasonable, and he was, I believe, a retired police officer that was now working as a night watchman on a big factory property or something like that. And he said he was riding his golf cart around the property late at night, and he came around the corner and saw an orb that was rolling. It looked basically like what he said was a diminutive man or a monkey walking inside like an electric hamster wheel. Like a glowing, imagine instead of the hamster wheel that it's just this orb of blue light with a creature, strange creature walking inside.
Now, Gene, you're just talking crazy talk. Now, I mean, the fire monkey, I was with you. But the glowing hamster wheel, Gene, you're kind of out there.
Yeah, the ectoplasmic hamster wheel. We're all running on the ectoplasmic hamster wheel here at Speaking of Strange. But, yeah, these strange reports, and we haven't really talked about them because a lot of them, they are just big stories, I think. Case in point, my cousin told me a few years ago, I got a trail cam photo off of a friend of mine who knows a guy that lives out in Alexander. Great picture of a black panther. And I was like, wow, this was taken in Alexander. And I shared it around, and based on his story, and only in the last few days, I ran a Google image search on this and found out that it's a cam photo from New Zealand that was circulated and lied about all over the world. Yeah.
Wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah. So just because your cousin or your friend told you it was real, always question the facts. This is Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. That's our friends Crickle and Woe. Jason Crickle and Amy Worthen. Good friends. Also, the Cracktones is Jason's guitar rock band. Plays a lot of the sort of stuff I like to use as bumpers here. Check them out. Crickle and Woe. Good friends. And Bat Rat Spider Crab, of course, that plays right into our hybrid creature talk. We will get the lowdown on some of this stuff next hour when I'm proud to announce John Hare will be our guest. Just like the hair on your head, only a double R at the end. John Hare, he's the author of some really interesting titles, not least among them Ghost Towns on the Upper Cape Fear, Bizarre Tales of the Cape Fear Country, Monsters of North Carolina, Mysterious Creatures in the Tar Heel State, and most recently, Flesh Falls and Blood Rains. We'll get the lowdown, John Hare, next hour. when I was writing my notes here, this was just a Freudian slip, but that subtitle for Monsters of North Carolina, Mysterious Creatures in the Tar Heel State, I wrote the Tar Hell State. So I kind of like that.
It's not very fair.
The Tar Hell State. Yeah, when you're talking about some of these monstrous beasts, mysterious beasts, but John is also he's a respectable author and historian as well. So I think this might just be his side dish, a curiosity with some of the more fantastic tales. So I look forward to chatting with him about just that next hour. Here's one that kind of makes you think, where are we headed? Playing God. Scientists create new DNA to make alien life form. Scientists are on the brink of creating new life. What could go wrong? Researchers in the USA genetically engineered common E. coli microbes to add DNA molecules which are not naturally found in the bacteria. Throughout the history of life on Earth, the code of life has been written in the DNA combined with four letters, G, T, C, A, which are the molecules which match with the DNA helix, which gives us all of our unique code. They have now extended this code to add two new molecules, which the team have dubbed X and Y, essentially creating a new life form that does not occur in nature. Huh? The team behind the project say they have created the synthetic DNA so that the bacterium create new forms of proteins which can be used for medicinal purposes. Dr. Rosenberg, the lead scientist from the Scripps Research Institute in California, said, "Your genome isn't just stable for a day. Your genome has to be stable for the scale of your lifetime. If the semi-synthetic organism is going to really be an organism, it has to be able to stably maintain that information. Life on Earth and all its diversity is encoded by only two pairs of DNA bases. And what we've made is an organism that stably contains those two plus a third unnatural pair of bases. In principle, we could encode new proteins made from new unnatural amino acids, which would give us greater power to even tailor protein therapeutics and diagnostics and laboratory reagents to have desired functions. Other applications such as nanomaterials are also possible." I'm not a real science guy. This has kind of got my head swimming, but when you talk about, altering the DNA, adding an extra pair.
Who are you to play Dr. Moreau?
Goodness gracious. What do you think about scientific experiments with creating new life? Shelley, is it a little...
It is not a good idea. I'm with Sam on this. I'm thinking Dr. Moreau. Yeah.
I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I mean, I'm sure it's already going on in some... I mean, it's going on in our food, and I don't necessarily think that's a wholly bad thing. If you are living in an area that's plagued by famine and you don't have food, being able to make food is pretty cool. But as far as humans, I mean, I'm sure somewhere in a lab that we don't know about, nor do we have a real need to know about, they've probably already messed around with that. wouldn't you say?
I would think if it's made it into the press, it's probably been going on
for years,
for a long time.
There's a lot that we don't know about, and it's for a reason. I think it's a good thing we don't know everything, because it would just create panic, and there's some stuff we don't need to know in it. It's above our pay grade, as you would say. You know?
Well put. Yes, indeed. Speaking of strange, Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, drop by the website, speakingofstrange.com. Drop by Josh's personal website, joshuapwarren.com. Is there a period after the P?
Hell no!
Coming up next hour, speaking with author John Hare, getting a little insight from somebody who knows better than me about the mysterious creatures and monsters of North Carolina. Looking forward to that interview. Hang with us.